Hi people, and hello my Chili Con Carne crew, it's Chili here from Live Listener Rage, bringing you an episode of Worst to Best, and we are going to be discussing Dream Theater, a band that I have been listening to for quite a few decades, and one of those bands that I really do enjoy. I love them, I do, but there are a lot of diehard fans within the community, and I know that this list will surely piss off a few of them. So here is my list of all albums ranked from worst to best, and this is just my opinion at the end of the day. So yes, your opinion may differ. I would love to hear it. That doesn't make me right or wrong, and that doesn't make you right or wrong. We're here to discuss a band that we all do love and enjoy. So let's get into it with the first album on my list. Kicking things off is going to be When Dream and Day Unite, and I think that there are going to be a few fans out there who are real diehards and saying that they love this album. How can you put it at its worst? For me, I just never really enjoyed this one. It is Dream Theater in its infancy, you know, back from, what is it, Majestic Days, with Charlie on vocals from memory as well. You know, and it is a little bit different, of course, to what we would expect from the band moving forward. You know, it's the band in their infancy. They're trying out some things here, and it's a very early and raw sound. You know, the band are trying to find their footing, and they're doing an okay job here for what it is, but come on, admit it, there are a lot of better works coming up within. So for an early album, for a debut album in particular, we should say, it's okay, but it just comes across as a bit needs work, you know? Like, yeah, if this was your first draft, you're definitely going to go through and rework a few things, which they did, of course, on upcoming albums. But, you know, as far as it goes, this is an album I just don't come back to at all. There are people who will, of course, say that there are a few tracks on here that are very good, they love it, and stuff like that. But I've never gone back to really any of these songs. Never. You know, I just don't feel the need, I don't feel the desire, I just don't really gel with this record. What can I say? I just don't like it, and it is the reason why it is at the least favourite album of mine. Unfortunately, for me at least, it's going to be at the worst end of the spectrum. And yeah, things are only going to get better from here, huh? The next album that I'm going to be talking about is The Astonishing, and that is an effort that, it just irked me so much. My OCD kicked in, and I guess that's one of the factors as to why I don't like this album. The other one is, it is too bloody long. We're talking over 2 hours in runtime. Now, I don't mind long songs. I don't mind Dream Theater's long songs, you know. They have a long record for all of the tracks, you know. What is that, like 20 plus minute songs, let's go for it. I'm down for that. But The Astonishing, the concept album, the one that goes for 2 hours and 10 minutes, and, you know, I wouldn't mind that in a Dream Theater set if that was a really good track, or several tracks, I should really add. But this is not. It's very boring, and it just drags on. It's kind of like, I don't know, the Judas Priest Nostradamus moment of Dream Theater, if you will. It just continues and on, and the thing when I said my OCD kicked in, this is what I'm talking about here. Several of these tracks are broken up into little sections here and there that are, you know, 20 seconds here or a minute 30 there, and I hate that. I really do. It's nothing against the album. My OCD just kicks over and goes, why is, you know, one long song split into 5 separate tracks here? If you were to go on shuffle, let's say, then this album makes no bloody sense. But if you were to go and back and listen to some of the old school prog rock records where, you know, Yes, for example, have 3 tracks on their album, they're not splitting those little parts up, you know, that's 3 tracks, that's it, shuffle, you can do it, you can listen to it. The Astonishing, I know, yeah, it's a concept album, you can't do shuffle, but yeah, The Astonishing, though, is just a bunch, you know, the first track, minute 10, the next track, 4 minutes 50, blah, 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 minute 52 here, 27 seconds there, and yeah, it just annoyed the shit out of me. I'm sorry, 34 tracks, you know, and it really got to me. But the main thing, of course, about this album, as I said, you know, that is just my OCD just kicking in. Doesn't really affect the score or whatever. The main thing was, it was such a boring chore. It was a chore to get through this album. You know, you really had to take the time and listen to it because of its runtime, but then you really need to put your mind to it because, yeah, you're going to, you know, disengage your mind and just tune out. That's unfortunate because when I listen to a lot of other Dream Theater songs that go for long durations, I'm not tuning out. I love it. I love every moment that I'm listening to it, you know. So, yeah, it is unfortunate that The Astonishing, which I'm guessing probably is the worst album according to many other fans, it sits here because of, as I said, for other reasons. But yeah, it's just not a record that I enjoy. It's one that I do not go to at all, and I try to avoid as much as possible compared to some of the other releases that are coming up here. Again, it's not a great record. The next album is Falling Into Infinity. Actually, I take that back about the previous two records. I guarantee more fans would hate this one and place it at their worst compared to the other two releases that I've just mentioned. Just thinking about it now, actually. But for me, this was an album I bought way back in the day, and I think there are some tracks here that really do well. You know, we're looking over it, and there's a couple of tracks that, for me at least, kind of stand out, like New Millennium, Peruvian Skies, and Hollow Years. These are all songs, and Hell's Kitchen as well, actually. I like that one. You know, these are tracks that stand out on the album, despite the band changing it up and, you know, going for this newer style of music. I guess they shifted their sound to the fans' chagrin, unfortunately, and you know what? I can understand that. It really is different compared to the other records that came out, you know, beforehand, and it's different compared to what would be released in the future as well. It's this little odd watershed moment within the band. You know, what are you doing? Don't do this. It's a bit of an odd piece, but still, I like this album. And again, I attribute this mostly to the fact that I bought this when I was young. I bought this record when I was young, impressionable, and still listen to it, a couple of tracks anyway, from time to time. And it's not like they shed everything away and just did short songs on here. There are, of course, Trail of Tears, which I like that song a lot as well, and Lines in the Sand, of course, both these tracks over 10 minutes in runtime. So they're still retaining that Dream Theater sound, that Dream Theater vibe, I should say, of, you know, writing long material, long proggy pieces. It's just that they did it in such a way that felt a bit, not jaded, but it just felt so superficial, I suppose might be the right word. You know, it's definitely not their best hour, and unfortunately for the 90s in particular, but, you know, it's a band that kind of finds themselves in an odd position when it comes to records of their discography. And I guarantee, you know, they don't play a lot of this stuff from, of course, this era, but, well, I just have a, you know, special part of it for me, because, again, it's an album that I bought way back in the day, and I just love it because of that. So I can't put it at the worst, because I feel like there are other records here that deserve that spot. The next one on the list is the self-titled Dream Theater album, and this was a record that I went back to after many, many years of avoiding it, because, you know, these first two records after Mike Portnoy after his departure anyway, I always just kind of, you know, I didn't want it, I pushed it aside as far as Dream Theater's catalog went, you know, especially the next couple of albums that were coming out as well, which many of which have already made it on this list, so tells you how I feel about this era of the band. But, you know, this was an album that it sat probably one spot or two spots lower than what it was or is now, but after listening to another album that'll be coming up soon, my thought process changed. It wasn't too bad of an album, actually. I gave it another shot, and it was a great album, actually. So yeah, The Enemy Inside, great song, and Illumination Theory, I should say, the long one, of course, at the end of the album. What is it, Dream Theater's long songs, they always do this, don't they? But yeah, as far as things went with Dream Theater, it's not too bad, and I definitely wrote this album off way too early. So yeah, I can understand how, I guess, a lot of people think as regards to, you know, Mike Portnoy holding him up as being one of the founding members of the band, and of course his unfortunate departure at the time, and just feeling a bit cross with the band, like I was, you know, like Mike Portnoy, he is Dream Theater, he is a massive part of Dream Theater, one of the greatest drummers out there, and I guess there was a little bit of, I don't know, pride or something like that to say, I'm not going to listen to new Dream Theater. So yeah, it's a bit of a pit situation there, and you know, it's a bit odd when you've got Mike Portnoy being replaced by another Mike, of course, Mike Mangini, I think it was, might have mispronounced his name there, but yeah, you know, he did a very good job of replacing Portnoy, but you know, it was just one of those moments where I'm like, I can't go back to this stuff, or the new stuff, I should say, turned into one of those old fans, you know, the old school fans. Yeah, their old stuff is better than their new stuff. So yeah, look, I wrote this album off initially, and it does deserve a little bit of praise. It's a bit better than what I thought it was. The next one up is Distance Over Time, and this was an album that I just never got into again. You know, it's really unfortunate when it comes to this era of the band, but at the behest of JC from JC Rock and Metal Reviews and Hector, who both said this is a really good album, I went back and listened to this one. And you know what? It's not too bad. It's certainly not a bad comeback from their previous effort where they reeled it in from The Astonishing. You're talking about an album half the runtime in the bonus track version anyway of their previous album, The Astonishing. And yeah, it's so much more cleaner, I guess you could say. No, sorry, streamlined. Streamlined is what I was trying to say. You know, with Untethered Angel and Bastard Warrior, these are both really good tracks within the record. The first half of the album, really, actually. Really good songs. I will have to admit, though, the last half was a bit, yeah, it was fine. You know, it's there. I'm not going to say it's terrible. But, yeah, you know, a distance over time, I think that Dream Theater kind of learned their lesson from doing the concept album prior, reeled it in and said, all right, let's just do what we do. And I think they were starting to get along that path again. They were starting to get back on the rails, if you will, and Distance Over Time actually isn't too bad of an effort, you know. So I'll give it a fair bit of credit there. Album artwork, though, is a bit, what the fuck is going on there? I don't know about this album artwork, Distance Over Time. I get what you're doing. I get it. Distance Over Time, it's a robot holding a human skull. Hey, yeah, Elon Musk is going to conquer the world, everyone. A dramatic turn of events is the next album up here on the list, and I can tell you honestly, when I was writing this list, this album sat way back at the very bottom, because for me, I just didn't really like it. But when someone recommended that I should go back and listen to a couple of tracks, I did. I went back, I played the album, and it was a lot better than what I remembered. I don't know why I bought this on CD. I think it was like one of the last CDs I've ever bought, and I just played it once and just left it in the boot of my car. And it's probably still there, even though I sold that car years ago. Whoever's got my car, might be at the Crusher now, but whoever's got my car has probably got a Dream Theater CD of A Dramatic Turn of Events. And whoever owns my car, go open the boot and go pick up that CD, because it's a gem. It's not too bad, actually. I think a lot of people, when it came to this record, the singles in particular, On the Backs of Angels, it just didn't do it for me, you know. That track, I didn't like it. And a lot of people were saying, oh yeah, you'll like A Dramatic Turn of Events, go listen to this song, or there was another one as well, maybe Lost Not Forgotten, I'm trying to recall here. But anyway, these two, whatever the songs were, definitely On the Backs of Angels, weren't doing it for me. I did not like it. Maybe Build Me Up, Bring Me Down as well. You know, these first three songs, I just didn't like it. And it just turns you off for the whole album. But there's a little trick that I learned as well when it comes to listening to music, or at least venturing back into some albums that you might have written off initially. And that is, you know, when you're going to maybe skip it around. Maybe try something a little bit different here. Shuffle play. I don't know. Skip the first few tracks you didn't like, because it's going to put you in that negative mood. And why keep that negative mood for the entire runtime? Am I right? So yeah, when I went back and listened to this album, I of course listened to it from start to finish, you know, powering through these first couple of songs, going, yeah, nah, don't care. But then I got to, you know, about, I think it was track 4 here, This Is Life, and yeah, that was a decent enough song. But I've got to say, what really turned it around, what really got me on this path, was Bridges in the Sky. I think that is a fantastic track. It's very odd, bit different and unique compared to what the band have done for long songs in their past. And I really do like this song. I think it's a very underrated track that people should go back and listen to. Bridges in the Sky is an amazing song. Just putting it out there for the record, quote me there. But, you know, followed by Outcry, again, you know, another long song, very good. And yeah, like, this last half of the album is really awesome, and I enjoyed it definitely a lot more than I had done so at the point when I first got this record. Again, it's a long record, you know, an hour and 17 minutes, but That's kind of the normal runtime when it comes to Dream Theater albums, I gotta say, so especially in particular with the modern stuff. But yeah, dramatic turn of events, and I know people are also gonna say, yeah, this album was named after what happened to Mike Portnoy, who of course left the band at this stage. And I know the band have come out and said, no, it wasn't, but yeah, we can read between the lines, mate. It was definitely a stab at your former bandmate there. So yeah, it's kind of like, I kind of feel like they're taking their Genesis moment, and then there were three. You know, this is definitely your Genesis moment, Dream Theater. A dramatic turn of events, we know what that's about, wink, wink. You know, it's yeah, we're on the inside of that joke, even if you don't want to admit it. So yeah, dramatic turn of events, everyone. A couple of spots higher than I imagined, and definitely a better album than I initially thought. Go back and listen to it if you don't agree. Maybe it might just change your mind. Next up on my list is Systematic Chaos, the 2007 release, and this is where I'm at peak Dream Theater. You know, I am loving what the band is putting out there. I've been a band fan for a couple of years here, and for me, this is, I know a lot of people don't really enjoy this record for whatever reason, but I do, I really do, because this is when I'm getting into the band. And I guess whenever you're getting into the band and the music that they are putting out around about this time, that's when you're going to start to really enjoy what is on offer. Systematic Chaos is no different, same with the previous couple of albums before this one, but Systematic Chaos is one of those albums, I don't know, I just don't go back to it as often as I should, probably would be the right set of words maybe here, but it certainly is a really cool album. I think the artwork is a bit drab, especially with the colours and stuff like that, and yeah, those weird little ants and stuff like that, but In the Presence of Enemies, Part 1 and 2, wow, I love that song, come on now. And this is also the band starting to go, like, I don't know, a bit of a modern, heavier sound as well. They're going back into a heavy metal kind of tunage here. And I just love this song. You know, it's, even though it's an album I don't go back to often, when I go back to it, I remember it so vividly now. You know, when you're listening to it, Forsaken comes up, or Constant Motion, and all these tracks, Prophets of War, and the Ministry of Lost Souls, all these songs here, except for the midsection, lol, are just like, wow. You know, I'm just getting these memories coming back to me, and I just love Systematic Chaos. I don't know what to say other than that. I think it's a really good album, but it gets overlooked a fair bit within their catalog because it falls in this weird time of the band. You know, Mike Portnoy's released, he's been sober for a couple of years, obviously, and he's constantly writing music about his 12 steps, and, you know, this album was no different. And I don't know, people just overlook, I feel like this is a very overlooked album. I guess that's the main point I'm trying to say here. It's a great album, it's a very good album at least, at the very minimum, but it's one that gets overlooked a lot, you know, within fans. So yeah, for me, it sits here, I guess, same with many other people. But yeah, I should probably go back and listen to that album now I'm thinking about it. When I'm editing this, that's what I'm going to be doing. I'm going to be listening to this one. Octavarium is next up on my list, and this is definitely where I am at the pinnacle of Dream Theater back in the day of 2005. This album came out. Every single one of my friends at the time were loving Dream Theater. I know a lot of them have drifted off since then in regards to their music taste. But, you know, when Dream Theater released Octavarium, every one of them at least loved the band and had this album. So, in turn, I had this album. It was one of those weird magic moments, I guess, going back in high school days where, you know, you were exchanging CDs, mixing it all up, and finding your crew, of course, based on their music taste. I don't know if my experiences are the same as yours. Probably are, but you know, Octavarium was that moment, I guess, in my life where, you know, we were just talking about metal constantly, and Octavarium seemed to be that album that came out at the right time for me. You know, it's very that album cover is very picturesque with the giant metal balls, of course, on it. I know there's a special name for whatever this is that, you know, it's supposed to be, what is it, Newton's law of transferal energy or whatever, you know. It's like the three marbles and there's two on the each side, and you release that one only goes. But anyway, yeah, I get it. It's the album cover itself is a bit, I'm going to say dull, to be honest. But the music within it, that's very different. It's very, very lovely stuff here. You know, and of course, well, really from even, maybe from this point onwards, I'll say, this is where we're talking, like, awesome stuff moving forward from the band here. You know, to kick things off, we go with The Root of All Evil, great opening song there. The Answer Lies Within, fantastic, I love that track as well. Panic Attack, oh my gosh, the bass line in that one is just insane, it's intense, it's all balls to the wall scenario here, and yeah, I love that song so much, just that kick-ass, the franticness of it all, it's just, wow, it's so amazing to hear. Sacrifice Sons, yeah, that one's not too bad, actually, yeah, but of course, Octavarian, the title track, if you will, 24 minutes, exactly, of bliss, it's just this perfect way to close out the album, and following, of course, to What Dream Theater Would Do on a fair few other albums as well, having that last long song on the record, and yeah, it was, yeah, again, Octavarian, just wonderful album. I think there's a lot of fans who will say, yeah, they'll agree with me here. You know, fantastic effort by the group. And of course, you know, a couple of live albums around about this time weren't too bad either, am I right? So, yeah, Live at Budokan, even though it came out the year before this, it was just this perfect moment in, you know, my life anyway, with my friends who were listening to Dream Theater as well. Here we had a couple of albums, the Live at Budokan, and then Octavarian comes out, and it's a great album to follow up all of this. So, yeah, fond memories when it comes to this one. Black Clouds and Silver Linings is the next one on my list here, and I know this one gets a fair bit of flack within the band's catalogue, I just don't understand why. You know, it's Mike Portnoy's last effort, well, to date anyway, with the band, and I think it's a really, really awesome album. I just love it. It's probably got one of my favourite tracks as well by Dream Theater on the record here with The Count of Tuscany. There's really fantastic proggy piece that's nearly 20 minutes in runtime, and I guess what makes it one of my favorites is it calls back to an older style, the 90s style of, you know, their progressiveness, the way that they are playing. It's not downright heavy, of course it's got its heavy moments, especially on this album, but it's not downright heaviness that is just in your face compared to some of the albums that were around about this time as well. Especially with, say, Octavarium and the album that came out before then as well. But, you know, this, it brings in a bit more melody. It brings in a bit more quietness when needed. And the odd story behind it all is just, it keeps you on the edge of your seat. And I'm pretty sure from memory, if I'm remembering this right, it's based on real events that actually happened to them. So it's made even more weirder, you know, this eclectic baron getting stuck out in the middle of God knows where in Europe, you know, car's broken down or something, and this guy just takes you in, this baron's like, hey, come in, I'll shelter you from the storm outside or whatever, and, you know, he's sitting down drinking wine, talking about his family, and takes you down to his family's crypt with all his family, and he's like, oh yeah, I have a few drinks here. What the hell? What's going on here? What a weird person. He sounds like someone I would like to have a drink with, eh? Nah, I'm joking. It sounds like The Shining stuff going on right there. So, yeah, it's such a bloody weird storyline. I think it's a perfect way to end off the album as well with The Count of Tuscany. Again, it's probably my second favourite Dream Theater song of all time, maybe third. It's got to be up there, though. It's such an amazing tune. And it's, yeah, one of those ones. And, yeah, this is only six tracks, but again, it's an hour and 15 minutes. A lot of songs here are very long. In fact, there's only two songs here that are under 10 minutes in the runtime. You know, and that's A Rite of Passage and Wither. Both fantastic songs as well. Wither, this great little acoustic piece that kind of breaks it up between the two sides, if you will. And, yeah, it just slows it right down. But, yeah, A Nightmare to Remember as well. Which, I'm trying to remember, I think that was about a car crash as well. That might have been based on real events as well. It was a car crash and waking up in the middle of nowhere, that's right, yeah. Oh, not remembering where you were. I could be wrong. Comment below if I'm wrong here. This might be based on real events. fact check me here again, but it's a great story. I think it's a captivating way to tell the events of whatever's happening here. And again, you know, Dream Theater firing on all pistons. I think they're working perfectly as a band, you know, just playing to their strengths, slowing it down when it needs to be slowed down, especially when he comes into the hospital scene moment and all that. And yeah, Black Clouds and Silver Linings was just a fantastic effort. And I remember buying this CD back in the day, and yeah, that thing got spun around to death. It was massively scratched by the end of the days, and unfortunately, I think I probably can't even play it anymore. But hey, that's just me and my record-keeping capabilities, so sorry about that, Dream Theater. Maybe I'll have to buy this CD again, because yeah, I love this album a lot, and it certainly deserves this high spot on my list. This next one on my list is certainly going to piss off a lot of fans here, but 6 Degrees of Inner Turbulence. Yes, that's right. I am ranking it this low on the list, if you will. It's one of those records I know a lot of fans, especially diehard fans, will sing its praises to death about. It is low for a reason, and that is because I discovered this album far too late when I was listening to Dream Theater. Yes, it's odd, you know, to put this, I guess, so low and say, yeah, I discovered it late, but, you know, there are reasons, again, why other records that will be coming up are higher. You know, Dream Theater is a band that I have a strong emotional connection to because of, you know, my friends listening to the band. And 6 Degrees of Inner Turbulence was one of those albums I just missed out on compared to some of the other ones. It's a great album, don't get me wrong, it is a fantastic listen, and the first time I ever played, you know, the entire second half of the album, that lovely 46 minute track, is a moment I will never get back, and I look fondly upon it, but at the same time, it's just, I don't know, it's really good, but it's a little bit teetering on the edge of long run time. I don't know how to describe that. I mean, you got to think about it. Do you have a spare 46 minutes to listen to 6 Degrees of Inner Turbulence? You know, the title track, for example, let alone the first half of the album. This album is an hour and 40 minutes in runtime nearly, and while a fantastic playthrough, that is still a long runtime at the end of the day. So, for me, it does sit a little bit low. You know, again, I only discovered this album probably, I don't know, 6 years ago or something like that. Yeah, I'm going to get a lot of hate for saying both of those things, so sorry. But let's go through the positives of the album. Every single track. It's no lie. It's a fantastic effort by the group. You know, The Glass Prison, fantastic work there. Blind Faith. I loved The Great Debate and the way that they interplayed a few clips there, which was a bit unusual, very unusual actually for the band to be a bit political in regards to their music. They usually don't do any such thing, but also B, to incorporate, I guess, audio cues from newsreels, from speeches and stuff like that into their music. You know, when they do various songs, they don't do that. They stick to what they do best, and that's them playing their instruments. But I think The Great Debate was handled in such a way that it doesn't, they're not taking sides, really. They're just showing, here is the great debate, here is the issue, and here is a discussion, a platform. So I think The Great Debate was handled in a fantastic way, that it's such a controversial, obviously, a controversial topic, you know, but it's something that we're going to have to discuss. They didn't separate their fans or cause divisions within their fans by taking a side here. They're just making a song about this massive piece of information at the time it was written, back in 2002. Damn, I forget how old this album is. Yeah. Anyway, back in 2002. Yeah, because I think, yeah, what was it? George W. Bush, I think, is on this one. Anyway, I digress. But yeah, you know, the first couple of tracks there, the first, what is it, five or so songs, amazing. Flawless, just, there's no bad tracks there. And then you go through the long one, the long piece there, of course, that is 6 Degrees of Inner Turbulence, and I haven't listened to that in quite a while. Again, it's just its runtime. I haven't had a spare 46 minutes to go through these kinds of albums, and I want to, but hey, I got a plane ride coming up soon, so maybe I'll listen to this album in full when I'm on the plane, you know, and I think that'll be a perfect time as well. 6 Degrees of Inner Turbulence, and I'll be going through all kinds of turbulence. The next one on my list is going to be Train of Thought by Dream Theater, and I guess this is going to cause a small amount of division within Dream Theater fans while watching this video and are up to this point. It is a bit of a dark horse in the catalogue of Dream Theater, and it was covered by the Green Man, who has appeared on my podcast as well, and he has his own YouTube channel. Go make sure to check out his video discussing this album in depth with his panel, because that is a great episode, of course, who just go through this album a bit more in depth than I'm going to, unfortunately. But for me, Train of Thought was an album that I played on high repetition at the time when I got it back in 2003, and I played it constantly. I loved it. I absolutely love Train of Thought. I've drifted away from it a little bit over the years, but I've come back to it once I started replaying this one. And I get it. This is, you know, Dream Theater's heaviest record. They're changing it up compared to what they were in the 90s. This very, well, they had more spacey kind of elements, more room to breathe, and they started getting a little bit heavier, but then Train of Thought just lands thud like a big piece of, I don't know, steak just coming down, like a tomahawk steak, you know, this 2 kilogram slab of meat, just boom. Train of Thought, people, massive metal influence, and it's one of those albums, I guess it's like they turned a corner, and this is what they would be moving forward. They've never been as heavy as they were since this record, but because I was listening to a lot of heavy metal at the time, I guess that's where I took my inspirations and love for this. The joy of listening to some progressive metal is just one of those things, you know, you cannot, I guess, that Dream Theater perfectly encapsulate, you know. And Train of Thought brought that heaviness to my little Slipknot mind in the day, and I thought it was a perfect mix, and all these songs are just great. Long tracks as well. Most of these tracks, I think every track except for two of them, are over 10 minutes in runtime. So As I Am, fantastic opener. Then of course there's that little track Vacant, 3 minutes, a bit less than that. But then there's This Dying Soul, Endless Sacrifice. Wow, what an amazing song, huh? Honor Thy Father, yeah, great track. Stream of Consciousness and In the Name of God. Wow, what an amazing set of songs all one off the bat. And the dark and ominous nature, I think, is perfectly reflected by that album cover that we can see there in black and white in a tunnel, peering from the darkness, looking out to the light. I think this is the perfect vision of an album cover for a band in its mindset back in the day as well. You know, art just encapsulates it perfectly. So for me, Train of Thought is an amazing album that I love to come back to, and I have revisited it quite a few times in recent times, and that's why it's bumped up. If I did this list probably many years ago, this might be in my top 2 or 3 albums, to be honest. It's bumped down, and now it's come back up a little bit. So this is one of those albums, I feel, that just floats around the spots that it's in. It's one of those ones that can change as well, especially compared to some of the other mixes here that'll be coming up, I guess, next. But yeah, this is the variable. This is the variable, people. Next up on my list, A View from the Top of the World. Now, when I gave a lot of flack, and I did give a lot of flack back in the day for that era of Dream Theater, you know, nay Mike Portnoy, I was like, there is nothing good that the band has ever done, you know, after he left. And, well, I guess for many people anyway, that thought is true. It's probably very true to a lot of people. So when it came to A View from the Top of the World, I already had my YouTube channel out for a little while then, and I did a review on this one, and it actually did quite well. Actually, it was one of the videos at the time that people actually tuned to and listened to for a lot longer, and made me discover that Dream Theater fans, they'll actually tune into your videos for longer than most other fans, which I love and I appreciate. And if you're tuning in this long, thank you very much. For me, this was a return to form, and I said that was the name of my 5-minute review when I discussed this album. For me, this was the return of form that I wanted to hear from Dream Theater. You know, it was this fantastic effort to just hear from the band and going back to it. It's one of those albums, I guess I haven't gone back to it in a little while. I probably played this album one too many times back in the day, and I reckon if I went back to this just now, I instantly would just fall in love with it again. It's got this really interesting album cover there, looking kind of, you know, here's the boots off to the side, this stone set between two mountains and the city in the background here with the moons and stuff. It's an odd looking cover. I don't know what to say about that. Of course, it's personified by the name of the record there, but you know, when you're going through the songs itself, which is obviously what matters here, you've got The Alien, fantastic little single that was to kick things off. But then you follow it up with like Answering the Call, great track. Invisible Monster, yeah, Sleeping Giant I thought was pretty solid there. And of course, the main piece though was the last track here, A View from the Top of the World, the 20 odd minute opus of the track, the album I should say here. And then a fantastic runtime, of course, with 1 hour and 10 minutes, a little bit shorter, a little bit shorter compared to most of their other albums here. And yeah, 7 songs perfectly just fit into this album. I don't think you could you might trim one song, maybe, but you don't need to. At the end of the day, I think that this album is so, I won't say perfect, but I think it's such a great effort by the band to come back from what they were, from what they were doing, you know, and I it won me back over. Dream Theater to me was a band that was of yesteryear, and I think that when it came to this record here, they definitely returned back to form and managed to have a little bit of a comeback, in my mind anyway, for what they're pulling off here. So it's definitely interesting that they're kicking it, they've got it back into gear, if you will, and now, of course, Mike Portnoy's back into play, and they're recording music as we speak. So it's going to be interesting to hear the band moving forward and what they're going to do, because I think that this was a fantastic effort by the group. I think they found their groove again. It's just a matter of, can they do it? Can they get it back? You know, can they find that flash that they had with Mike Portnoy? Fingers crossed. But this was a fantastic effort by the group, and definitely one of the, definitely the best effort that was done by Mike Mangini. And yeah, I think that's perfectly reflected. That is by the position on its list. So yeah, fantastic work by the band for this one. The next one up I'm going to discuss is A Change of Seasons. Technically not an album, but considering the runtime of it, I'd say it kind of falls into that category. And that is this fantastic little record here. So I would almost rank it higher. It is such a great little piece. But we're talking about, there's a couple of live tracks here. So I don't know. Do we count this as a studio album? No, it's a little bit too short if we're talking about just studio recordings. You know, but then the live versions of these songs are just flawlessly done, of course, by the band. And the title track. Wow. The title track. Let's discuss this song, people. My favorite Dream Theater song is A Change of Seasons. A fantastic effort by the group, this near 24 minute magnum opus, if you will. And I think it's just perfectly done. It's such a flawless song. There is nothing that I can say bad about that track. Perfectly visualizes, I guess, what is life by the Seasons. And for me, the way that they discuss it, going through the entire musical pieces, moving through different, you know, emotions, stirring emotions with their instruments, and of course the discussions within. You know, they begin off with spring and this wildly eclectic music, of course discussing about the youth and the joys and such that comes with that stage of your life moving forward, and you know, coming into your summer lives or whatever, and growing up, moving on, and autumn is just come round the corner. Where is life going at this point? And of course we get to the final stage, winter, and it's it's just such a powerfully moving song, and I think a lot of Dream Theater fans will agree with me here. You know, comment below how much you love A Change of Seasons, because for me, this is setting the benchmark as far as storytelling goes, as far as progressive music goes. When I did my review, or rather, when I was doing my reviews on Weezer at the time, and they did, you know, their concept of, oh, we're going to be doing albums called Seasons, and they're going to release an album every season, I kind of had a thought that Weezer were going to do something similar to what Dream Theater did here with A Change of Seasons, and I kind of based my review a little bit biasly, perhaps, against it. Because, of course, Wiz, this is not bloody Dream Theater. Come on, people, let's move this along. But no, I mean, they did something different. They did their vision. And for me, when you're talking about Seasons personified as, you know, the carrying on of life and stuff like that, this right here, this 23 minutes and 8 seconds is the perfect soundtrack for what is life and, you know, traveling through it in such a way. It's such a perfect record. And we haven't even discussed the live tracks. We've only discussed the first song here, and wow, we're still going here. So yeah, you know, A Change of Seasons, I love that song. Then we move along to the live, and you know, these live tracks here. Funeral for a Friend, Love Lies Bleeding, great Elton John covers, Perfect Strangers, Deep Purple, great cover there as well, which also I think the band would do they did a live Deep Purple album only a year ago or a year or two ago. So they love Led Zeppelin, of course. Then there's the Led Zeppelin medley with, you know, the Rover, Achilles' Last Stand here. The song remains the same. All these songs coming into play, and they did it. They always nail these things. Come on, man. And the big medley, of course, the 10-minute track that is multiple tunes, multiple riffs that you can just hear within the Flesh, Carry On, Wayward Son, Bohemian Rhapsody, Love and Touch and Squeezing, Cruise Control, Turn It On Again. And yeah, these all of these songs right here envelop a perfect record. Very short runtime, under an hour. So yeah, if you got 24 minutes, go listen to the title track. If you have a spare hour, listen to this whole album, because you won't regret it. I guarantee you. It should be up there, I guess, as one of the most, for me anyway, I think it's one of the best prog records ever made. I'm just going to say right there. But it's undervalued because people just see it as that one track plus live ones. I think it is one of the best albums out there that you can really get your hands on. Just saying. Moving on to the big three, and we're going to kick things off with Awake. For me, an album that just... it's such a great album. Awake. This is my first Dream Theater album, actually. I think my brother found this in a CD somewhere in... probably in the gutter. I'm not going to lie. I think he told me this story one time back in the day, and he said he found this CD in the gutter or something like that. And here you go. Hey, listen to it. You like music? Listen to this. You know, and there's this little CDR36 thing written with black permanent text that Awake, all the track titles, Dream Theater. Nah, what the hell? It's a bit scratched. Put it in. Listening to it. And wow, what an effort here. What a way to kick things off, I guess, as well. Because, yeah, it's such a great album. I think it's one of the best ways to get into Dream Theater is through Awake. Or one of the albums that'll come up next. But yeah, Awake is one of the best ways you can get into them. And I think this was Kevin Moore's last effort. I'm trying to remember. I know he left just shortly before the album's release. But I think they used a bit of his stuff here. And, you know, especially when you're listening to tracks like... trying to recall. Erotomania? I might be saying this wrong. Erotomania, I think. That little keyboard thing is absolutely nuts. And let's kick this back a bit, because it's 1994 as well, and you're releasing a progressive metal album. And I wouldn't call it metal either. Like, back when Dream Theater were in 1994, it's very much still got that prog heavy stuff. They're not heavy metal at this point. They're a band at a crossroads, you know, they're leaning into that stuff, and it's a time that music like this shouldn't work. It just is the peak of grunge, or rather grunge is, I guess, dying out, but it's just an album that shouldn't work and does, you know, and it's just amazing to listen to. And I'm thinking, I can hear Erotomania in my head just like singing, going through this as I'm going on. Like, that is how much I have played the album. 6 o'clock, fantastic little kicker. Caught in a Web as well, Innocence Faded, all these songs, Space Divest, love it. The Mirror, there's just every single track. Every single track here is amazing. There was one song I can't recall right this moment, but it kind of reminded me of like a Sega Genesis game, the soundtrack of, and I kind of got a feeling it may have been either the Silent Man or the Mirror, one of these two tracks, somewhere around here, just in the weird, like, progressive and technical, the technical aspects of it. I don't know, it just reminded me of some kind of game I used to have on the Sega Genesis or Mega Drive here in the rest of the world. But yeah, it just, the soundtrack of it just recalled, it just reminded me of it. It just sounds of that era, I guess is what I'm trying to say here. And I think it's an album that, despite being of that era, has aged pretty gracefully. I think it's still very, very good and holds true, you know, in sound, in quality. It still is a very great listen when you're listening to this record. And I love the album artwork as well. This whole picturesque kind of desert-looking thing where it's just black and white except for the mirror with the man looking back. So I do like it. It's definitely peak 90s, very much so. But I grew up in the 90s. I guess I'm going to have nostalgia for this stuff. So, yeah, maybe people who are a lot younger than me will listen to this and go, it sounds too old for me. But I think it's held up well, considering, all things considering. I mean, hell, this album came out in the year of Dookie. You know, that's a way of putting it in perspective, I guess. So, anyway, Awake, really good album. Go listen to it if you haven't. It's just an awesome playthrough. Images and Words is the next one on my list, and what can I say about this album, really? Except for the fact, like we said with the previous one there, that this shouldn't have worked. It's 1992, progressive metal, or progressive whatever rock you want to say, it just came out at the wrong time. But it still did, and I love it for the fact that it just pulled through and said, yeah, we're going to do it anyway, you know, screw this, we're going to do our own thing, and, well, they're still around, they're still kicking ass, and this album is held with such high regards. The album itself is just that imagery, the burning heart that's got barbed wire around it, the weird little girl. It's a very, very odd, again, it's a very peak 90s album artwork, especially for the band, trying to go for that surrealism, almost Salvador Dali looking stuff, I suppose. You know, just this weird shit's going on the album cover. But Pull Me Under, everyone, Pull Me Under, of course, is going to be the best song here on play. And how can you say, what can we say about Pull Me Under? It is the track that everyone knows by Dream Theater. In fact, they made light of it when they released a compilation album, you know, a best of album, if you will. And they said, oh yeah, here's a Dream Theater best of and 23 other tracks. And it was 24 tracks in total, of course. So yeah, it's, you know, here we are. We've got our song, of course, the one that everyone knows, Pull Me Under, plus 23 other tracks, yeah. So, Pull Me Under, fantastic song, great way, amazing opener. I think as far as openers go for the band, the best one you can easily go to. You know, and shit, I mean, if it's got 66 million plays, that feels quite low, actually, compared to what it should be. But Pull Me Under deserves way more plays than what it's got there. But it is easily one of the highest played tracks by the band. So that is fair play, I guess. Let's move into the other tracks here with like Another Day. You know, and again, this is an 8-track album. Perfect runtime, an hour. And I feel like an hour is perfect, you know, for Dream Theater. This, the newer stuff, they're pushing close to the limits of CD world with an hour and 17, blah, blah, blah. I think that when they move into that, you know, if they try to cut themselves down to 60 minutes tops, I feel like they're going to streamline their efforts into perfection like they did here. So, of course, you know, Another Day, great song. Take the Time, yeah, I like that one. But Metropolis, Part 1, what kickstarted their career, I suppose, as well with Metropolis and what would come out of it. And, of course, with the number one spot. So, yeah, this song, if you weren't aware, it created a whole album, the one that we will be discussing next. So yeah, Under a Glass Moon, pretty cool there, and Learning to Live, again, fantastic way to close off the album, longest track on the record, again, with the style of Dream Theater, we're going to keep it to that. So yeah, Images and Words is such a flawless effort by the band. How can you not love it? How can it not be so high on your records? I feel like Images and Words is going to be number 2 for a lot of fans at the end of the day, because it's hard to beat the number one spot. No, And the number one spot deservedly goes to Metropolis Part 2, Scenes from a Memory. What can I say about this album that hasn't been said before? Maybe I can say this. I can't remember who said it, but they said this album is perhaps the greatest prog rock album ever made. So I think there's a lot of truths behind this. I mean, again, this is a concept album, perfectly showing that Dream Theater have the capabilities to do so. Unfortunately, they wouldn't do so in the future, but, you know, when they put their minds to it, they can write a concept album, and not just any good, you know, not just any album, not just any concept album, they can write a flawless concept album. So yeah, Metropolis Part 2, if you're unaware of Dream Theater and you're listening to me rant on about the band, thinking, oh, am I going to satiate my curiosity and listen to these records? This is a concept album, so you got to play it from start to finish, people. You got to do that. But it tells the story of a man, and he's just reliving his past when he goes under for hypnotherapy. So I won't ruin it too much further, because there is a lot to be told about that record that you have to go back and listen to, you know, to get the full story off. But yeah, Dream Theater fans out there, you know what we're talking about. You know what we're all about here. And yeah, I think that these tracks are just perfectly done. The production, amazing. The band sound great. But it's not just that. It's the way that all these tracks just seamlessly edit into, you know, the mix. There is no real gaps between the songs where it feels disjointed, like some other concept albums might have done in the, you know, in the future or the past. And I believe they probably took cues from like Pink Floyd with The Wall, or to an extent Tommy. Maybe Tommy was a bit more disjointed in certain aspects, but you know what, they obviously took what was an idea and just perfected it here. Metropolis Part 2 is one of those albums that I've been meaning to show Woz, because I know he loves his prog rock stuff, but I feel like Dream Theater is a little bit too heavy for his likings. But it's the album that I really want him to listen to, because it's held up with such high regards. It's such a fantastic effort by not just the band, but really in prog rock communities. Everyone points to this album and goes, yes, this is the album you got to listen to. It's such a great record here, you know. And I'm not going to try and point out tracks, because, you know, even though with the 12 tracks here at an hour and 17, it's every single track. You got to listen to it. It's not just one song here and one song there that really stands out. It's the whole thing that makes it work. Because, yeah, I could probably take, you know, one track here and listen to it, like, you know, Deja Vu or something like that, or The Spirit Carries On, for example, and these are great songs on by themselves, but you're taking away from the bigger picture. You're taking away from the fact that this is an album you have to listen to from start to finish to really capture the moment, to really feel the band. And yeah, I know I've talked previously about not having the time to, you know, listen to various tracks like 6 Degrees of Inner Turbulence or, you know, The Astonishing. I haven't listened to this album in a long time, but still, if I don't need to. I've listened to it that many times, and I know it's that good that if I had the time and went back and listened to it, it would just be amazing. Again, it always is when you listen to this album. So yeah, I've crapped on enough about this. You all know, as Dream Theater fans, how good this record is. I'm actually a bit more curious. Does anyone in the Dream Theater community hate this record, or maybe dislike it, think it's not as good as what it is? I'd be more curious about that, because I feel like this will be the number one or two slot for most Dream Theater fans. But I'm more curious to hear if it's not in your top, let's say, three or four or five, why that is the case. Do you think it's maybe an overbloated project? Do you think it's like just held up to so much hype that it didn't live up to your expectations? Because that's a bit more of a curious aspect I want to hear. I want to hear the other person's perspective, I guess. So that does it for me for Dream Theater ranking all their albums from worst to best. Again, this is just an opinion. This is just my opinion as far as the Dream Theater catalog goes. And I hope that you've enjoyed this episode because, yeah, it's been fun discussing the band and it's been fun listening to all of these albums again, you know, in preparation for it. I thoroughly missed the group, and when I was replaying a few of these albums, I'm like, damn, it's been ages since I listened to this. I should go and listen to this album instead now. So, yeah, it's been a really fun trip to be doing this, and I'm being curious to hear your opinions on the matter as well. Give me your list. Tell me your favorite albums ranked from worst to best by Dream Theater. Or comment below in regards to, well, I don't know, anything Dream Theater related. Because we're here and we're here to talk about Dream Theater and how much we do love their music. So, thank you for checking out this episode. Once again, I hope you have a great day. And everyone out there, stay spicy. If you've enjoyed this content, make sure to smash that like button, subscribe to us, and stay notified for future music-related content because it keeps our manager happy at the end of the day. We are also on Discord, Instagram, Facebook, and all those other social platforms if you want to check us out. As always, people, you have a great day and stay spicy.